We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Why, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Guys, this episode is once again brought to you by you. Yes, you, the wonderful people of the Patreon. Thank you. Genuinely, thank you so much. Anyone who has signed up to a paid subscription on the Patreon, we really appreciate your support and your help. We would not be able to do this without you. You are like Atlas lifting this podcast up on your shoulders, and we thank you so very much for your help. Of course, we couldn't do it with just you alone, unfortunately. And so, this is because obviously this is clearly a very schmick operation and a very expensive operation. It's clearly not just one guy with a camera in his spare room. That would be an insult to all the work that other people have put into this. No. So, in order to bring you the schmick quality that you've come to expect, I have needed help from some heavier hitters. So, this episode is sponsored by a couple of things this week. We are sponsored by National Day of Giving Something Away. Yes, that's right. National Day of Giving Something Away. So every year on July 15th, National Day of Giving Something Away is celebrated by the simple act of giving. That's right. Be it something as simple as a gift you absolutely hated, or just something that you bought when you were an impetuous youth with no taste. I did celebrate National Day of Giving Something Away this year by partaking in one of our other major sponsors. That's right, National Lottery Day. And I'd like to thank National Lottery Day for helping me to celebrate National Give Something Away Day, as I was able to give away all of my money to the lottery for lottery tickets. Real helpful. Thanks, guys. And our final sponsor for this episode is World Day for International Justice. And I've got to say, guys, I was really looking forward to a good, clean celebration of international justice this year, but I have to admit, my day was absolutely ruined by the failed Trump assassination attempt. And while it does feel just that the man majorly pushing for political violence at all turns was the victim of said political violence, I do feel it is very unjust that the reason he is still alive is that his stance was just a little too far to the left of what it would normally be. And of course, the true hero of the hour is the live shows. Yes, the live shows. I wouldn't be able to do any of this without any of the live shows. So thank you to anyone who's ever come out to one of the live shows. We have finished the run of The Platypus, and that was an excellent time. If you managed to make it out to The Platypus, genuinely, thank you. I've enjoyed working on that. Something a little bit different. Got to work with a bigger team, and hopefully The Platypus will be coming out to again at some point. We've talked about touring it, but who knows? We'll see. For now, though, it's just me, little old me, with my own live shows, and I've got locked in the Melbourne Fringe for both of my storytelling shows, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once and Wage Against the Machine, running from Thursday till Sunday, October 10th until October 20th. I will be trying to lock in a couple more festivals between now and then, and even just some events that aren't festivals, so keep an ear out, as I will be coming around to places, hopefully, near you. Until then, guys, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. Now let's start with the headlines, shall we? Denmark has recalled several spicy ramen noodle products from South Korean company Samyang, claiming that the capsaicin levels in them could poison consumers. And I think that we've done it, guys. I'd just like to huge congratulations to Denmark. Yes, I know we've all been waiting for the results of this poll, and it's nice to see Denmark. Congratulations, you've just won the title of world's whitest country. It's a tight contest there, and England tried very hard to make all of them the world's whitest country, but Denmark, you've come out on top. Congratulations. And look, guys, I can say that joke because I'm the kind of white that even racist white people say, man, you need a little bit of melanin. Joey Chestnut, the reigning champion of the Nathan's 4th of July hot dog eating contest, was banned from this year's competition. When asked for a comment, Chestnut said if he was being frank, he didn't understand why the organizers were getting all up in his grill and that this banning was the worst. The ban was put in place after Chestnut signed a deal with not only a rival brand, but a brand of vegan sausages. Now, don't worry, vegans, I won't be making any lazy jokes about vegan sausages being inedible. That's not how we roll here. This whole thing has thrown off a lot of people's Independence Day plans because they were really rooting for Joey. Chestnut said he didn't understand why there was a ban on this vegan brand, as like all hot dogs in this competition, none of them contained any actual meat. And while he said this whole situation was disappointing, just like the hot dogs that made him famous, Joey had no beef. See? The vegan jokes weren't so bad after all. The good thing about vegan puns is, you know that they won't be cheesy. Speaking of inedible food, McDonald's lost a European Union trademark dispute over the Big Mac name after a top European Union court sided with Irish fast food rival Supermax in a long-running legal battle over the use of the name, saying consumers would be confused. I think this just shows how little respect they have for our intelligence. I've never accidentally confused Superman with Big Man. No, not at all. Superman is a superhero, and Big Man, well, he's a male who I saw on the street and instantly decided that I didn't want them to be the last face that I ever saw on this earth. Isn't that right, Big Man? I know it's important to know the difference, okay? Scientists have made cocaine from a tobacco plant. This science was brought to you by the good scientists at the Institute of Turning Things into Cocaine. You know their motto, yeah, that's great, but have you heard of cocaine? Oh my God, we should start a band. Actually, I was having what we in the business call a little bit of a goof-em-up. Some funsies, right? Some good old funsies. Learning more about the drug and its production could result in researchers creating a less addictive variety of cocaine that still retains its anesthetic properties, which would be useful in medicine. So brace yourselves, guys. You know that this means we're going back to original recipe Coke. Forget original Coke. This is the old school Coke, where the word Coke really meant something. Intel is halting plans for a $25 billion factory in Israel, citing nothing in particular, just the general vibe of the area at the moment, you know what I mean? The Israeli government was really caught off guard, suffering consequences for their actions for the first time, saying, hey man, we've been doing this for 75 years, why would you pull out now? That story again, Intel has finally reached what it's called its limits of acceptable genocide in order to do business with Israel. Chinese detainees held in Adelaide for 15 years have finally been deported despite living in Australia their whole life. Yeah, that's right, Adelaide Zoo's pandas Wang Wang and Fu Ni are set to be deported back to China after they failed to have babies. Seems a little harsh to me. Make them spend their entire life in Adelaide, and then when they fail to feel horny after living in Adelaide, you deport them to China. They narrowly missed being sent to detention centres in Nauru. Maybe if they were grizzly bears, then they would have been sent to Nauru. But it turns out they aren't brown enough for that kind of punishment. Bob Catter has tabled a so-called castle law, which would allow lethal force against home intruders. Presumably in a noble attempt to save Queenslanders from being torn apart by crocodiles every 3 months. But I'm not going to spend any more time on it. May a thousand blossoms bloom when this thing gets turned away. While the wholesale murder of another person may seem like an extreme thing to approve of, at least if the castle law passes, it would allow Mother Nature to destroy intruding coal mining companies without any consequences. So you've got to look on the bright side, team. The first new anti-smoking campaign in a decade is set to target vaping as its main focus. The proposed bans did come into effect as of July 1st. In an unusual twist on what these kind of campaigns generally look like, this campaign uses the threat of social harm, not cancer, to get its message across. Because they know, if you vape, that you won't live long enough to die of cancer. No way. You'll freeze to death because you're so fucking cool. Walmart is replacing its price labels with digital screens, kneecapping consumers' ability to look under the label and check if specials are actually specials. But the company swears that it won't be using it for price gouging. If you're wondering how they'll avoid the temptation, it's simple. They'll simply be rebranding surge pricing as real-time reflective pricing indicators when talking to consumers, and when doing sales calls, they'll be calling it Price Surging, baby! Benjamin Netanyahu dissolved the Israeli war cabinet that had been overseeing the conflict in Gaza, apparently moving to solidify his grasp on decision-making over the fighting with Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah across the Lebanese border. Yeah, look, he's finally figured out that he doesn't actually need an entire cabinet for him to say, are there still Palestinians alive? Well then, keep on bombing! Going on to clarify, all these nice countries just keep giving us bombs. It'd be rude to let them go to waste. Moving on now to some of the bigger news. We're starting with capitalism news. Yes, capitalism, you know it, you love it. You're likely hungry, cold, or depressed because of it. Capitalism. As much as we all love capitalism, and I'm sure that we do, capitalism loves you and your increasingly hard-earned money. And another example of capitalism's love for you, Canadian airline WestJet has heard your woes about expensive flights, and in response has done you, the little people, a little old favour by premiering a new ultra-basic fare that is two-thirds lower than regular fares. See? Capitalism is always innovating for you because they love you. But as they are making some sacrifices, well, you'll need to make some sacrifices too. It's only fair. Small things, you won't even miss them, so don't even worry about it. Let's see, this new no-frills fare option doesn't permit carry-on baggage, unless you're flying overseas, has pre-assigned seats at the back of the plane, and you can't collect WestJet rewards, and those who select the fare will be the last to board the plane. See? Small things. You won't even miss them. Baggage, clothing, underwear. No. We do have footage of the first passengers who bought the airfare. Can we get a look at that?
Shame. 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 Shame.
Now, you'd think all these reductions, they might be getting a really good deal on their flight. Maybe it'll be worth not having a bag in which I can pack some spare underpants. With all that money I'll be saving, I can just buy new underpants in the city that I'm visiting. And then I can pay to have them mailed back home afterwards, not only saving me money, but also supporting local businesses and propping up the dying industry of mail delivery. Look at this, everybody wins because of this. Look, maybe WestJet should be praised for their innovative means of supporting local economies. Did you think about that? No, you were greedy and all you did was thought about yourself. I mean, what's the cost of one of these tickets? Let's have a little look-see here. Ultra basic fare. So, if we're getting an ultra basic fare, then we are getting, well, from Toronto to Calgary, which is roughly the distance of Melbourne to Perth, that'll cost around $650. See, $650? And I can't even take underpants. What if I want to take an extra bag with me? How much is that going to cost me? If you want to take an extra bag, that'll be a luxury. If you want to take a bag, it's going to cost $137. See? Just buying underwear is way cheaper than spending $137 on a bag. You can get discount underwear at Target. And imagine how much faster you'll go through security now that you don't have any pesky bags to worry about. Sure, they may stop you for the suspicious behavior of going to an airport with no baggage at all, but they'll get you out there pretty quick. All they have to do is do a quick internal inspection. But you can account for that by showing up to the airport a full day early, so you can go through a full day's interrogation, and your overnight accommodation will be taken care of by airport security. You won't even need to pay to stay somewhere. You're already saving money all around. I mean, don't think you can be clever and wear all of your clothes at once, stuffing your underpants into your pockets or wearing a backpack as a fancy hat. No. It does actually say in their fair fine print that anyone caught wearing more than one layer of clothing would be charged an extra "why are you so poor" fee. Only one layer of clothing is actually allowed as per the rules of the fair. So it seems socks, no shoes, underwear, only one pair, as previously mentioned, and a t-shirt, or if you're a woman, you can choose between either a bra or the t-shirt, but you can only choose one because it is one layer on each level, okay? And if these fares aren't to your liking, don't worry, WestJet is introducing even cheaper options for none of your flight needs. We've got Premium Ultra Basic. So with Premium Ultra Basic, the toilet costs $10 per 30 seconds, but at least they didn't feed you. So that way, you might not actually need to use the toilet at all. See, we're saving money. Super Premium Ultra Basic, you pay extra for the chair, otherwise you just sort of need to sit back to back with another passenger, like Forrest Gump and Bubba trying to get to sleep in the mud in Vietnam. Unless you pay for the seat charge, and then you can have a seat. Jumbo Deluxe Basic, where you'll be required to leave the plane just before it has actually landed. However, parachutes will cost extra, so do choose when you disembark wisely. Fortunately, this one is run exclusively with Boeing jets, so getting the door open is actually going to be very easy. Super Jumbo Deluxe Basic, where if you wish for the use of oxygen in the plane, well, it's going to be charged by the minute. And of course, there's the Premium Super Ultra Jumbo Deluxe Basic, where for $99, they send one of their baggage handlers to your house and give your head the Qantas baggage treatment until you think you took a trip. And then they call you a dirty popo cunt as they leave. Moving on to AusPol News. Australia's ramping up for the 2025 election. And while the date is not settled and campaigning hasn't officially started, it's never too early to make your feelings on the important issues known. And right now, there are a few issues more important than pandas. That's right, pandas. Well, I say pandas, it's really more placating China, but that does involve some panda diplomacy. Chinese Premier Li Xiang visited Australia for the first time since 2017, and on the agenda was talk of Adelaide's pandas, Wang Wang and Funi, who are here as a sign that China is currently happy with us and sees us as a useful ally. And while the attempt to get them to mate has been a 15-year failure, which you can't really blame them for, Adelaide's zoo staff said visitors rose by 150,000 people the first year that they were there. When you have 150,000 unexpected visitors, it's easy to be a little bit gun-shy and not really find a private moment to undergo the intimate act, and then you fall into the routine, and before you know it, 15 years has passed, and people out of Australia are looking for younger, more virile pandas to replace you. Welcome to the world of show business, pandas! But we won't be getting our new panda friends for nothing. No, certainly not. This is a trade-off. In order to get our pandas, China has asked for a few small things in return. We will need to trade our rented pandas, who will not fuck, for the secrets of how to violate international human rights law by putting people in indefinite detention and yet still be liked in the international community. It's a delicate balancing act, and I think it's one that China really needs to learn. It's a complicated deal, to say the least, and one that we are definitely getting the better end of. See, what China has failed to take into account is, despite 60,000 years of non-white history, we have rebranded as a white country. It does take many years of genociding to reach these levels of white, but most importantly, the genociding must be done by white people. You understand? That's where you've gone wrong, China. You're doing all your genociding with Asian people. People get a bit uncomfortable with that. They're sort of reminded of World War II. The transition to the white collective is doable. It's been done by many before. Italians, the Irish, Greeks, all lumped in with the whites. And like, we kind of consider Israel to be the whitest Middle Eastern country, but kind of turned on them recently. They did sort of fuck up. They're still a little bit too brown to be immune from these kind of fuck-ups. But China, I am sorry to say, you can't join our secret club, no matter how many white men obsess about your women. It's just gonna take way too long. Reportedly, the Premier even offered to return Harold Holt if Australia could get the new pandas to fuck. To be honest, we're terrible with protecting our own native species. You can't entrust us with yours, China. What are you doing? Are you insane? Have you not seen how many species that we have lost recently? Not even in the history of things, recently. Hey, this is a delicate gamble that you're doing. But nothing says we are unsure about the upcoming election more than discovering that the federal government is fighting for the right to destroy documents when it loses office. Yes, you gotta love how confident these guys are. Confident in their ability to hold office. One administration, and they're like, it's best if we're able to shred all of this paperwork, and we definitely won't be back for another election, so let's take care of this now. And these guys want us to believe in them. These guys think they're our only hope. These guys think they're the Obi-Wan Kenobi of Ozpol. Albo, buddy, you gotta believe in yourselves first. Come on. It's the basic rules. How can anyone learn to love you if you can't learn to love yourself? Sure, you haven't held office for nearly a decade, and then you went through 3 prime ministers, and 2 of those were the same prime minister. Kind of like the old rabbit season, duck season sketch from the Looney Tunes, you know, like, Gillard season, Rudd season, Gillard season, Rudd season, Rudd season, fire! But this is exactly why the voters don't believe in you. Attorney General Mark Dreyfus is appealing against the federal court ruling in a Freedom of Information case that a minister must preserve a predecessor's documents if an FOI access application remains unresolved when the minister leaves office. After a court challenge brought by a former independent senator and man confused by his feelings for anime characters, so tried to ban them, Rex Patrick. After the Albanese government refused an FOI request for Morrison government documents. The case has highlighted the long-standing practice of ministers shredding some potentially sensitive documents as they leave office in the belief that they were not required to hand them on to successors. In the government's defense, those documents are probably really damning, and it is better than their usual response of just burning the whole building down, forcing the next government to pay for the repairs, and then decrying the incoming government for wasting taxpayer money rebuilding all these buildings that mysteriously got burnt down. Justice Natalie Charlesworth ruled that ministerial paperwork belonged to the office of the minister and not the individual occupant, warning the practice of shredding paperwork to keep it from incoming opponents is possibly criminal and must stop. She said it was up to Parliament to balance the need for secrecy with the need for public access. And of course, by need for secrecy, politicians do mean the need to bury their dark deeds deeper than Harold Holt at the bottom of the ocean. Just like how the details of more than $25 million in taxpayer-funded VIP flights for Australian ministers and dignitaries will be kept secret after the government cited national security advice for the decision to no longer publish flight logs. The Guardian Australia did analysis of the data between 2021 and 2023 for what are known as special purpose flights. The data shows the cost of using the defense aircraft has risen 26.6 million over the period, including 10.3 million in 2023 alone. Labor are in the top 10 spenders currently, but as the party in power, this isn't a huge surprise, even if they definitely could have spent much less. Maybe like fly economy guns. Imagine how many flyboys points the government could rack up with the amount of money that they spend on food and booze for parties. If all of their flights were on commercial flights, then they could log airline miles and get some free flights, saving the taxpayers money. I think they need to hire a frugality czar to teach them how to save money. Just don't get one from PwC or the other big four. No, they have no idea how to save money. This is a job for someone who has had to really live and struggle on Centrelink payments for a number of years. You want someone who knows how to stretch a dollar? That's who they need to learn from. They can pay them as a consultant. It'd be a really good job for them. These flight logs are important information. It's the kind of thing that could be quite important for revealing that, look, as a random example, say Peter Dutton claimed $23,000 in travel expenses after flying to Tamworth in a taxpayer-funded private jet for a News Corp event where he delivered a speech criticizing the government's response to the cost of living crisis. I believe the speech was called My Hypocrisy. Presumably, he went up there to say the government has been too generous with their bare-bones approach to the cost of living, saying that if poor people really wanted to give back to the community and help the rest of the country in order to earn that money that they're given by the government, well, he's got a plan. His plan is twofold, because if elected, he will help the coalition reach net zero by 2050 by generating clean, renewable energy by making Centrelink recipients run in hamster wheels as part of their new Work for the Dole scheme, or rather their new Rush Dog for the Dole scheme. Moving on to Knack news now. It's the Knack. It's the start of the Knack. Oh yes, the start of the Knack. Oh my, the start of the Knack. So, the National Anti-Corruption Commission, the body put in place by Anthony Albanese as a response to some pretty shitty moments in recent political history, including most publicly and arguably most importantly, the RoboDebt scandal, which would deliver on a pre-election pledge to restore trust and integrity to federal politics. Big ask, right? Setting up some big promises of hope for integrity and retribution for malfeasance. So, how is the Knack holding up this lofty promise that it was built upon? Who will be the first of the infamous RoboDebt 6 to fall under the mighty sword of the Knack? Surely, we start with the biggest fish of them all, so then the little fish can get a good idea of what's coming for them, a good dose of terror before they also get punished. I'm excited. Let's get into it. How corrupt was RoboDebt?
But in developing news this afternoon, we know that the Knack now won't pursue an investigation, saying that, quote, the six public officials in connection with the scheme had already been fully explored by the RoboDebt Royal Commission.
Oh, shit. Not a great start. Well, I guess we'll never know. It's disappointing, to say the least. It's just frustrating, you know? When poor people were suspected of wrongdoing, there was a mass clampdown, guilty until proven innocent. Oh, and by the way, you have to prove your own innocence. We won't help you in any way. We won't even photocopy papers. You have to do that. You have to pay for that. But when the white-collar staff were proven in an investigation that they were in fact guilty, no need to investigate any further. They've been through enough. We can't upset them anymore. It'd be embarrassing for them. They legitimately said that it was undesirable for a number of reasons to conduct multiple investigations into the same matter. Undesirable. Tell you what, a lot of things about RoboDebt were undesirable. Falsely accusing the public was undesirable. Driving Centrelink recipients to suicide was undesirable. Treating ordinary, mostly innocent citizens like criminals was undesirable. Letting a man with the righteous ego of Scott Morrison be in charge of the poor and the vulnerable was undesirable. Can we balance a few of these undesirable acts in the other direction, please? Now, before you judge, it's not like one of the duties of the commission was to investigate, quote, any conduct of public officials that constitutes or involves a breach of public trust, constitutes, involves, or is engaged in the purpose of abuse of the person's office as a public official, or constitutes or involves the misuse of information or documents acquired in the person's capacity as a public official or a former public official. So I don't know why we're all getting so upset about it. It's not like it's written down anywhere. It actually makes sense when you realise, despite the CEO being part of the ICAC team that found Gladys Berejiklian corrupt, and one of the deputy commissioners being the former CEO of AUSTRAC, who helped find the banks and Crown Casino guilty of money laundering, they are still living in a world that was formed under 9 years of coalition government, who would be quick to do a little bit of funding cuts. I think they have some proper PTSD from that. Tall poppy syndrome really is only real in the public sector. If you stick your head up, your funding head gets cut off. It might be the only place where cancel culture could be said to genuinely exist. You badmouth the government for doing a terrible job, and you're going to have your funding cut. And those funds are going to be diverted to support a fund that is the exact opposite of your organisation. You might remember there was a sealed section of the RoboDebt report, which was sealed so it wouldn't compromise future investigations. Should they happen? The conduct of six unnamed public officials was at the heart of the section. All we know for sure is that they were recommended for investigation. Catherine Holmes specifically wrote to the Attorney General to ask to push back the June 30th deadline by a matter of days, as she is very good with details, you see, and she noted that she would be unable to refer suspected or potential corruption to the NAC because it would not exist until a day after the report was meant to be handed to government. Clearly, she was really keen to make direct referrals. It was the only reason given for Holmes's request to delay the report. The only reason. So not following up with the very investigation that she pushed for, that's a real kick in the face for the commissioner. It's like when Commissioner Gordon turns around to finish a conversation with Batman and he's just disappeared, you know, partway through the sentence. Not at all surprising, but very rude. You're supposed to be working together to bring the villains to justice, not fucking off to do your own thing halfway through a sentence. Holmes updated non-publication orders for the Royal Commission to prohibit mention of any notices of potential adverse findings or potential referrals that may have been made and sent to affected people. So none of these fuckers managed to get off from the recommendations of individuals for civil action or criminal prosecution, by prejudicing any further civil action or criminal prosecution. We don't want to fuck things up, guys. We might only get one chance at justice. Maybe not anymore. But we might only have that one chance. We might have had only that one chance. Maybe we still will have that one chance, hopefully. Remember, legislation for the NAC is retrospective and contains a deliberately broad definition of corruption. So we have a fancy new definition of corruption, retractive powers, and people who actually have successfully investigated others in the past. What is the holdup, guys? What is going on here? You're building up for some kind of super corruption charge? Because I could get behind that. That'd be a fun time for all of us. So what have you got for me? What are the reasons that we aren't investigating? Is that Well, it says here that members of the NAC say that RoboDeath has been fully explored by the Royal Commission and extensively discussed in its final report, stating there is not value in duplicating work that has been or is being done by others. That's how you can tell these guys aren't fucking scientists, right? So much of science is just checking and rechecking the work of other scientists. There is a lot of value in doing the work again to find new conclusions. The NAC said that it could make a finding of corrupt conduct, but could not grant a remedy or impose a sanction, nor provide any individual remedy or redress of the recipients of government payments or their families who suffered due to the RoboDeath scheme. Quote, the NAC has therefore decided not to commence a corruption investigation as it would not add value to the public interest. Hey NAC! As a member of the public, I can assure you we're very fucking interested. Especially as one of the names likely to be investigated is your enemy and mine, Scott Morrison. There is a high chance that this former head of human services, one of the major architects of RoboDeath, a man who has failed up so high he's sitting at the top of Mount Everest, which, if only he had the courtesy of doing what a lot of people do when they're at the top of Mount Everest and dying. But I digress. It's impossible to claim that there is nothing of public interest when people's enemy and former Secretary of the Department of Human Services, Catherine Campbell, immediately resigned from her cushy $900,000 a year defense job with AUKUS after the RoboDeath findings. That is also something I am interested in, NAC. Not to mention, Paul Brereton is not only in charge of the NAC, but he is the head of the 2020 inquiry into alleged war crimes by Australian troops in Afghanistan, where he was officially criticised for failing to hold senior officials accountable. The independent panel appointed to oversee the Brereton inquiry rejected Justice Brereton's conclusion that senior commanders should not be held accountable for the murder of 39 Afghans. But here's the wild part, guys. Here is the wild part. According to reporting by independent journalist Shane Dowling, Paul Brereton and Catherine Campbell, they're buddies. They have been for a long time. Numerous pictures of Brereton and Campbell together at the same time, at the same events, along with David Hurley, before he became the Governor General, date back to at least 2008, have all been uncovered. The NAC statement noted that in order to avoid any possible perception of a conflict of interest, Commissioner Brereton had delegated the decision to a deputy commissioner, going on to say, they did the right thing, clarifying it's only corruption if it comes from the corrupt region of France. Otherwise, it's simply called sparkling administrative semantic manipulation. Basically, these public officials are moral benders. So the world has advanced. You got your water benders, your earth benders, your fire benders, and your moral benders. And they all come together to form the Avatar. Now that is something that I'm interested in, NAC. The levels of intrigue is like climate change. Every day, there's a little bit more of it, and governments keep looking the other way. Until either the people complain loudly, or it starts costing them money. Well, the people have spoken loudly, and en masse, over 900 complaints were made about the NAC, who, in the face of mass accusations of people taking government money and not doing what was required of them, decided it'd be a good idea to take a lot of government money and not do the one thing that was required of them. I'm not really sure how they thought this was going to go down. As any Centrelink employee will tell you, you have mutual obligations. They don't just give government money away for you to do nothing. At least when a Centrelink recipient isn't meeting their mutual obligations, it costs less than a livable wage. I mean, that's a bargain compared to the $265 million over 4 years that these guys are getting to not meet their mutual obligations. Which is why, thankfully, an independent inquiry has been launched into the NAC's decision not to investigate the Robodebt referrals. Who watches the watchdog? The inspector of the National Anti-Corruption Commission, of course, the big bad wolf come to blow down their corruption gale furnace. Furnace said, many of those 900 complaints allege corrupt conduct and maladministration by the NAC in making that decision, which is just beautiful. What a way to start things. Ah, what a great time. Weirdly, she's only doing this job part-time. Yeah, part-time. She's working part-time as the inspector for the New South Wales ICAC and the NAC. Ah, yes. Part-time investigator. Ah, perfect. What else? What else would you expect for this exact kind of thing? A part-time investigator. Because we all know corruption only happens 2 to 3 days a week, as it is hard work, and they really need a 4-day weekend to just relax after a hard 3 days corruption. I think we've actually learned from the best investigators in history, Mystery Inc., corruption can actually be rooted out in a good half an hour investigation. This does also involve leaving some time for eating some big snacks, having the team split up into their usual pairings, and of course, a hallway chase. They then need the 4-day weekend to drive around randomly until they stumble onto the next corrupt location that they can investigate. I think there's only one solution. Seems we can't trust anyone who has been in the government's orbit or good graces to run the Anti-Corruption Commission. We need a fresh face. I have a pitch. Hear me out. Julian Assange. Think about it. He just got home. He's willing to take on the American government, which is a much bigger battle than anything the Australian government will throw his way. And he clearly is going to have trouble getting a job of any kind from now on. Plus, nobody really trusts him. He's got no friends. The Conservatives think that he's a troublemaker who undermines the government and the military. And to Liberals, well, he's an accused rapist. Granted, the case was dropped despite the victim being acknowledged as a credible, reliable witness. So that's something to think about. It's never a great thing to hear or to have floating around. Not to mention that he is known as a known bad roommate. And if there's one thing that either side of politics will not abide, it is a bad roommate. Because while staying in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, he was given a set of house rules that included cleaning his bathroom and taking better care of his cat. Because apparently he wasn't doing those things. He was sent a memo in which he was warned that his cat could be confiscated. Lefties will not stand for neglecting animals. You can do just about anything you want to a person, but you neglect a pet and you will know the internet's wrath. Moving on now, it is art news. Yes, we talk a lot about the arts on this platform, and often it is a wild sculpture or a wild painting that people look at and say, well, I could have painted that. Well, then go ahead and do it. Why haven't you done it already? Because you couldn't do it, could you? But aside from talking about my own live shows, live theatre is often an overlooked section of our regular arts features. Until a special event comes along, focusing our attention, like a laser, on this stupid behaviour. And it's with that in mind that I introduce Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Listeners would know him from starting a fight with Disney World and then trying to be the next Trump. But without that weird riz that Trump seems to have, I mean, we all know that he's going to be the first person to bend the knee should Trump win the election. Well, DeSantis has defended vetoing virtually all funding for arts grants in Florida. Which is weird, because I genuinely thought Florida was one giant performance art piece, a satire about the dangers of feckless fear-mongering and reckless behaviour. You might be wondering, whatever have fringe festivals done to you, Ron DeSantis? Why are you taking their money away? Did you see a one-man adaptation of your favourite film franchise that didn't live up to the hype? Do you not like clowns? Did you take the wrong message from watching Baby Reindeer? Did you get handed one too many flyers? If I'm honest, they can be a little bit frustrating, so I do understand that last one. What was the straw that broke the alligator's back? Well, DeSantis said he didn't want state funds supporting sexual-themed festivals, singling out fringe festivals. Oh, so you did see a clown show. I do apologize, DeSantis, for that. They do love to get a little bit excited and whip out their wangs. But it's getting harder and harder to win awards these days, so it takes more and more extreme behavior, you know? I had bookmarked a bucket load of state funding to buy drones to strike Disneyland in the next great skirmish. Florida's war on work. After recently failing to topple the Titan of Disney, he needed an easy win to convince the good people of Florida that he was working for their best interests, saying, "We didn't have control over how the funding was being given. So you have your tax dollars being given in grants. Things like the Fringe Festival, which is like a sexual festival where they're doing all this stuff." I assure you, Governor DeSantis, the only thing sexual happening at my Fringe Festival shows is how fucked I'm getting by venue fees and inside ticket charges. It's pretty clear DeSantis has never been to a Fringe Festival show in his life. If he thinks any money whatsoever is making its way to the artists. The average audience size is about 10 people. That money isn't going to clowns getting their dicks out. If the festival gets any money, it's all going to the festival. A festival which, by the way, draws thousands to Florida each year. Thousands who bring money into your state. You know money, that thing that drives the economy? I'm sure you're aware of it. Sure, it's no Disneyland, but he did also try to pick a fight with them as well. And that didn't go very well for it, did you now, champ? But it seems like he's just really angry and hates money. You want to see the scandalous world of fringe art? You want in on the secret world of fringe? Well, get ready, because this video has it all. Yeah, that's it. That's the whole thing. That's basically Fringe. It's that tiny room up the road. It's the same show, but this guy's wearing a clown nose and no pants. And then up the road from that, again, it's the same show, but someone is dancing while this plays as the soundtrack. And then up the road from that, the infamous show that tours globally, mind you, called A Young Man Dressed as a Gorilla, Dressed as an Old Man, sitting rocking in a rocking chair for 56 minutes and then leaves, plays. Yes, that's a real show. It's not even a joke. You can look it up. But I get it. 56 minutes of a person not speaking while the audience does what they will. Nothing is more terrifying to a politician than people having the freedom to do stuff that they want to do. DeSantis said, "This is as much about the state having to verify that the money supports worthy projects. They can't just spend your tax money on ridiculous ventures like clowns or jugglers or, worst of all, mimes. No. That money must be spent on very good and logical endeavors like creating an election police, flying migrants to other states, or introducing a law which requires that voter registration forms be signed with quote, wet ink rather than digitally signed. Yeah, that's a real thing. DeSantis has spent more than $17 million defending his terrible laws in court since he took office. As a result, the state budget for 2023 included a $15.8 million allotment just to defend his policies. His administration has actually spent the most defending laws restricting voting rights, transgender healthcare, and academic freedom, what's known as the dystopian holy trinity. Although I must admit, I think the standards for dystopian overlords have lowered a bit since 1984. Sure, they were just boring, organized government types, but at least they knew how to get stuff done. They didn't nickel and dime it fighting fringe festivals and the trans community. I was kidding before when I said DeSantis had to redirect arts funding to his war on woke, but here it is. Here's the proof. This $15 million had to come from somewhere, because they sure as shit aren't taxing the rich for all that extra money. But if it's a sex fest that he's worried about, the allegedly Catholic DeSantis needs to have a read through that Bible that he brought from Amazon. He will be shocked at how dirty it really is in there, I tell ya. Be it Solomon's monster schlong, Moses' wife throwing his children's foreskin at him in Exodus 4:24-25, the revelation that if your testicles are crushed or your penis cut off, you can't go to heaven. That's in Deuteronomy 23:1. A woman lusting after men with dicks like donkeys who come like horses, yes, in Ezekiel 23:20, or a warning not to dishonor your father by fucking your mother in Leviticus 18:7. And that's among many others. Time to remove that tax exempt status, Ron DeSantis. Need some money to fight the transgender agenda. Don't get me wrong, I've seen some shows that made me think that maybe this whole fringe festival thing isn't worth it, and put on a few that have made other people think that exact same thing. It happens. But honestly, if we take away the fringe, all we have left is corporate art, like Super Bowl ads, peddling crypto, AI images of multi-fingered monstrosities that escaped the uncanny valley, or Andrew Lloyd Webber's cats. Ugh. Ugh. And that is a punishment that I wouldn't inflict on anyone, no matter their crime. Except for Memories. Memories is a fucking banger. But the rest of that play, get fucked. And finally, it is hot dog news! Yes, hot dogs! It's July now, which means two things have happened. Americans blew off their fingers with fireworks, and other Americans are taking eating their feelings to an extreme level. As the annual Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Competition happens, at the same time, the ultimate celebration of freedom that America gained by leaving England happens. Can you imagine the English doing something as stupid as a hot dog eating competition? No, 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 no. They're much too prim and proper for that. Oh sure, they'll chase some food down a hill, but they're not speed eating it. They will take their time with that cheese. And I think we all know who took the title this year. The undisputed multi-year champion!
Patrick Guadagnini! 58, Nathan's famous, and one.
Hey, who the fuck is this? That's not Joey Chestnut. Where's Joey?
Joey.
16-time champion Joey Chestnut will not be defending his title after being banned from this year's competition.
Banned? Banned? Well, what did he do? Did he perform enhancing drugs? Is this like a Lance Armstrong situation? Has longtime champion and idol to the hungry masses been taking performance enhancing drugs? Well, that wouldn't matter, as the International Federation of Competitive Eating doesn't do any sort of drug testing or have contestants certify that they haven't altered their bodies in any way. So it certainly can't be drugs. But what could be so bad that it got the reigning champion banned from the competition?
Because he came in and actually signed an endorsement deal.
Oh, is that it? He signed an endorsement deal. That monster! Fuck! How dare the reigning champion of a sport make an endorsement deal to try and make some money from his celebrity status? I mean, honestly, you'd never hear about Michael Jordan making endorsement deals when he was with the 92 Bulls. Well, sure, there was that one, but that one doesn't count, right? It's just the one anyway, right?
Like Mike, if I could be like Mike.
I wanna be like Mike.
Like Mike, if I could be like Mike.
Alright. So Jordan did ads for Chevrolet in 1984, Nike in 1984, Wheaties in 1988, Heinz in 1989, Coca-Cola / Gatorade Switch in 1991, Upper Deck in 1992, and fucking McDonald's in 1993. And I gotta be honest with you, he did this ad as if that man ate McDonald's and then went on to be world champion basketball player and didn't just simply die of a clogged artery instantly. So who was the deal with? I mean, it must be pretty severe for him to get booted from the entire competition given the long history of athlete endorsements. What was it like? Raytheon? Was that the... Because I couldn't understand if it was a deal with Raytheon.
Actually signed an endorsement deal with a vegan hot dog company.
A spokesperson for Major League Eating told ESPN that Chestnut had chosen to represent another hot dog brand and therefore would not be allowed to participate in the Nathan's contest. The deal was signed with Impossible Foods, which makes plant-based proteins. Now I've got to say, are we counting vegan hot dogs as real hot dogs? Vegan hot dogs aren't even the same caliber of hot dog as regular hot dogs. They don't have any shoe leather, they don't have any rat feces, and not a single bit of animal anus in any of them. Why do you think they call them impossible? We didn't think the power of the hot dog could be harnessed without animal anus meat. So I think the easiest way to determine this is strictly by the numbers. Joey Chestnut holds the world record for hot dogs eaten in 10 minutes at 72. A so far undefeated record, even by himself, because in 2023, he only consumed 62 hot dogs to take the title. I say only, but 62 is 61 more hot dogs than I've ever eaten in 10 minutes. So how many did Bertoli eat? Look, as impressive as 58 hot dogs is, Chestnut, who was running an event on the same day at a US Army base in El Paso, Texas, wolfed down 57 hot dogs in 5 minutes, one less than this so-called champion. So as far as I'm concerned, this Patrick Bertoli is in all aspects a pretender to the throne! A pretender to the throne! Usurper! Usurper! And we can look forward to reliving the events of this and its repercussions in future ESPN and Netflix co-production, The Last Lunch. And that is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. I really hope you enjoyed this one. If you did, do feel free to share it with anyone who you think might enjoy similar content. We can boost up those numbers. I think it'd be a really good time. As always, if you can, come out to one of the live shows. Don't forget, I am doing the Melbourne Fringe Festival and some other festivals and some other locations once they get locked down. Thank you so much for all your support. I do appreciate those of you who continuously come back. Thank you so much and goodbye. Thank you.